Queen Carvania stood haloed by the morning sun. An army hung on her every word.
My champions, I have sold my chariot on Carvana. 'Twas a lovely SUV, an inexplicably queenly offer. They're even coming to the castle to collect it. Tonight, we feast!
An offer you can feast on. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome back. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Hello, mate. See how I'm using the language of the title of the show? That is clever branding right there. Tell you who else have got some clever branding. Duelit. We love those guys. The prize is available. Nearly 500 quid's worth of brilliant Duelit stuff. Listen, you might be thinking, oh, it's a bit of an advert at the beginning. It's really not. There's some great hashtag content in this bit as well. John Robbins, he's my guest today. What sort of noises does he make if he is given a Duelit toaster?
Oh, is that a fancy one? I would really like that.
Is it an advert? Is it the show? You'll never know. All you need to know is if you want to react like that, if you want to have that moment where you are handed a fabulous Duelit toaster and many other Duelit things, and you react a bit like this.
But guess what?
What?
You've got it.
Oh my God.
Seriously. That could be you doing some light blaspheming because you have won a fabulous prize package. Head over to duelit.com/toasterpod. duelit.com/toasterpod. Only a week or two left of this competition. So hop over to duelit.com/toasterpod right now and you can feed that lust for all things Duelit. That lust best expressed by the very articulate John Robbins.
I really want this.
Oh, he always finds the right words. Honestly, it's like Tennyson reacting to a toaster. Any more for any more, John?
I love Duelit.
Yeah, absolutely nailed it. Of course he did. Thanks, John. And so will you if you go to duelit.com/toasterpod. We could get on with the show, but I feel we've already started. Is it an ad? Is it the show? Who really knows or cares? It's mega lols already.
What's a sandwich cage?
Oh, when I need a laugh, there's a helping people. But don't pass talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find in the town stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, it's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Yeah, yeah. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, toaster for my love, thank God.
Toaster pod. Yeah, take it to the bridge. I saw a mate the other day who asked me if that's me singing all these. Of course it's not. I've got no discernible talent whatsoever. That's a man called Ed Beaumont. He's very talented indeed. Thank you, Ed, for all of the fabulous things that you do for My Mate Bought a Toaster. Thank you for bringing your ears and for subscribing and being a toasty, a slice of toast, whatever you are. Hello. Today's guest is John Robbins. Oh, he's so good. I'm so, so happy that I got him on the show. One of those moments where he called me and said, I'd like to come and do your podcast. And I said, yes, yes. And it's a good one. We talk about all sorts of stuff across the, it's a long one as well, the next hour. Philip Larkin pops up. You can hear me attempt to quote Philip Larkin and fail miserably. You can hear John talk about locked-in syndrome, which is quite a topic to take on. But once again, the nature of this beast. Who knows what we'll be chatting about next? Locked-in syndrome, thyroids, or coffee? Which of those? Let me tell you, all of those and more are discussed. Because that's what we do here on My Mate Bought a Toaster. It's a great, great episode. It's a fascinating walk through John Robbins' life and career so far. There's some dark moments. There's some very, very funny moments. And there's a very good chat about printers earlier on. The whole thing is gorgeous. Thank you for listening. Stick around at the end. I'll be telling you about my last episode of this series, which is coming out next week with Alex Brooker off of The Last Leg. He is fantastic. And I'll be telling you a bit more about that at the end of the episode. So make sure you stick around. Oh, and also, sorry, we will start in a moment. This is an edited, cut down episode. It's an hour, but there's about another half an hour up now, this second, on our Patreon page. It's £3 for like a month. You can just join for a month and listen to all the John Robbins stuff. If you are a John Robbins super fan, just join for £3. You can hear half an hour of even more random stuff. It's patreon.com/toasterpod. Patreon.com/toasterpod. Shall we? Can we? Dare we? Let us. Hello, welcome back. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster, the only show that tells its guests' life stories via their online purchase history. My guest today is the brilliant comedian and broadcaster, John Robbins.
Hi, Tom. Hello, everyone. Just like to apologise for coming straight from the gym. I hope the camera is picking up my gains, and I hope they don't intimidate you.
We are having to change the sofa. Because this is the Amazon Confessional sofa. The muscle is so weighted you down that the sofa was I was going up because you're so densely packed now as a person.
Well, as you will see on my Amazon history, I'm getting through about a sofa a week.
Yeah.
I am lobbying for the disposable sofa, which is sort of 3 or 4 use max for guys like me who are born to bench.
Yeah. Do you feel like you found your tribe? When you go in the gym.
Good cue. I've got access to a lot of different tribes.
Yeah.
The intellectual elite, the CrossFit community.
Yeah. Don't mention golfers. You've got to mention golfers.
Well, professional golfers. Yeah. Great. The great sort of statesmen of our age. And I like to just sort of move between those, you know, some of the great ambassadors, sort of the foreign diplomat community.
In terms of a Venn diagram, who then is there who ticks all of those boxes?
I think you might be looking at him.
Just that guy?
Yes. The only person able to solve problems affecting the 5 key areas of foreign diplomacy, CrossFit, golf, politics, and science.
You are the leader of a tribe of one.
Yes. Yes. Very good.
There you are.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
But that's great because that means no one's going to depose you. Although that could go into sort of self-loathing territory. We could
do that. Well, what if I depose myself?
Then
a coup d'etat. A coup d'etat de uno. I'll fly a helicopter into my own house to extract myself before breaking down my own front door. And
would it be bloodless?
Yeah, it'd be bloodless. It would be a sort of a cold coup. But, you know, just to cycle back to the gym thing, my face is quite blotchy.
That's fine.
So that's my main sort of issue is the sort of blotchiness of the face.
But I don't see much blotch, to be honest, genuinely. And I'm not just saying that in a kind of, no, it's fine, love. I genuinely don't see the blotch.
Okay,
is the blotch one of those things you get very self-conscious about? Is it your version of my hairline where no one else cares, but you feel it?
Yes, I think I am very hard on my my skin. I'm very judgmental of my skin.
Do you self-troll?
I massively self-troll my skin. Mm. And in fact, my Amazon history will tell a tale of products, sort of chasing your tail around products to try and cure problems that actually no one else notices.
Yes, yes. But there's money to be made in them there.
Oh,
self-curative hills.
So much money in the... SC Hills. Amazon buying history, I would say it only spiked in the pandemic because I was so miserly with myself that I didn't actually pay for Prime until the pandemic. And it actually, began a real change in my thinking about money because I've always been very, very tight with myself. And focused on economies that were a complete waste of time and energy. And as soon as I bit the Prime bullet, it sort of changed my attitude to lots of different sort of financial things.
Yeah.
Like I was fiddling around with thinking, right, I really need this for Monday, but if I get the free postage packaging, there's a risk because there's Sunday, so it could be Tuesday.
Ugh.
And I would sort of sweat all this stuff for the sake of £2, like 95 or whatever.
Awful, but living like it's 2005.
Yeah, yeah,
we're
yeah.
not in those days anymore.
So as soon as I got Prime, I stopped caring about little things like that.
John Robbins 2.0 began.
Well,
probably 3.0 by then.
No, that was Mark 13.
Right, okay.
John Robbins Algarve for Mac users.
Oh, that's just beautiful. Hang on. If we're going back to 2005 now, John, is this John Robbins Mountain Lion? What was
2005? That's when I started doing stand up. So that would have been John Robbins.
What OS are we talking about here?
Oh, this is like 2.1 John Robbins. John Robbins Ben Nevis.
Okay, nice. Right. Okay. The foothills. The foothills of this journey as we begin an expedition into your shopping history. And we start with the first thing you ever got on Amazon, right? In November 2005.
Yeah.
You're sort of looking quizzy, like you're about to try and answer the question. I'd be impressed if you can remember. Between Nothingness and Eternity.
Oh, that's a Mahavishnu Orchestra album.
Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Yes.
Talk to me.
So I would have been, that would have been sort of towards the peak of my Frank Zappa collecting phase. Mm. I would have had most of the albums by then, but someone recommended John McLaughlin, who's got this, he's an extraordinary electric guitarist, or extraordinary guitarist, and he's got this kind of real, like, machine gun sort of approach to the electric guitar, but he played with the Mahavishnu Orchestra, who was sort of like a slightly more spiritual side of prog rock.
Okay.
And yeah, but I wouldn't have called that as my first.
That's what it is.
It's quite cool, actually. I'm quite pleased with that.
It is cool.
Yeah, I'm quite cool, actually.
Yeah.
You're going to skip past the hemorrhoid cream.
We have to offset it. It has to be beautifully balanced.
Light and shade.
All right, okay. So, John, let's move into 2006, okay? So
Glorious.
Really great times. Van Morrison, St. Dominic's Preview.
Oh, what an album.
Here he is, look. But
what
also,
an album.
Can we get the same amount of enthusiasm for the Canon PixMar MP500? This is a photo all in one with an LCD viewer in 2000 plus 6. That is groundbreaking stuff right there.
To have my printing, my scanning, and my photocopying needs all in one, I can't tell you what peace of mind that provides. Don't think I ever used the photocopier. I think I've scanned my passport once. And it's sort of just general printing.
But it's like a sort of admin insurance. It was good to know it was there, a safety net of paperwork stuff that you never quite use.
What if I suddenly start running a business that sort of lives by 80s rules?
Yeah,
I'm going to need a photocopier, a fax machine.
Ashtray.
I believe it may have had fax. It may have been fax.
Fax friendly.
Printers, I have never allowed myself to be too reliant on them because they are sort of a very stressful product.
That was my last great tantrum.
Was it?
Apart from golf, maybe. But my last proper tantrum where I was like, I need to see someone about my tantrums, was destroying a printer in about this time, actually, when I was about 25, 26.
Luckily, they're about fiver now, those printers. They're sort of all in one. They are £5.
Yeah, but that's what they do. They make the printers cheap and then the cartridge is expensive.
Do you know what I said to Ellis James the other day? I said, Apple should make a printer that's £1,000 but works perfectly forever. I would 100% buy that.
I'd happily pay £100,000. I'd have a mortgage. I'd have a printer mortgage. Do you know what I mean? I'd be fine with that. At this point, though, you're doing stand-up. How long have you been going for it in 2006?
A year.
Okay.
A year and a bit.
Treating it like a business, printing stuff. Did you print up, you know, like set lists and stuff like that, or were you just scrawling it on the
hand? No, this would have been for printing sort of posters for the gig I briefly ran in Bristol.
Oh, you were a Bristol boy, weren't you? Mm. So you lived, I've forgotten this, so you lived with that Russell Howard?
Russell Howard, John Richardson, Mark Olver.
Yes.
I once put on a gig at the Richmond Springs, which was a double header of Russell Howard and Daniel Kitson.
Yes.
Something like £3 a ticket.
Wow.
I mean, could I shift tickets for that? No.
No.
It was literally like posters on in sort of windows of like newsagents.
Wow.
I mean, how else did you... I may have mentioned it on my MySpace page, I think.
That's got to shift a couple. So we're in the Bristol years here, living in a house full of comedians. Presumably that's a pretty miserable experience. Lovely as all those people are, of course.
It was great, actually.
Oh, was it good?
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Competitive? I would find it very competitive. I'd get very annoyed about people getting phone calls because back in those days, you'd get a gig booking on the phone.
No, it was more collaborative, I think. So like quite usefully, like Russell was headlining, Richardson was opening gigs, Olver was comparing, I was doing open spots. So there are a few times where we were the lineup for a gig.
Oh.
And, you know, what would happen was, you know, if Richardson got offered a gig he couldn't make, he might offer it to me. He'd say, oh, John can do it. But we used to be, we'd be like sat in on a Wednesday night and Russell's phone would go and he'd look and be like, oh, shit. So he's just completely forgotten about a gig. He'd leave it. Richardson's phone would go. And it would be the promoter calling Richardson to see if he knew where Russell was. He would leave it. Olver's phone would go. And so sort of Russell's sort of rather scatty brain would ripple through our mobile phones.
You'd be the snitch in that situation. I'd be the snitch. I'd be like, he's right next to me. He's
here actually. I'm willing to take the gig. I can get there in half an hour.
Subscribe, rate, review. Subscribe, rate, review. Subscribe, rate, review.
Find us on YouTube. And don't forget to leave a review at my main border toaster. Subscribe and rate and review to my Mate Border Toaster. And don't forget to say something nice.
So you're in Bristol with a bunch of comedians in 2007 now as we journey through your Amazon purchase history. Oh, look, a Nintendo Wii, because you do like fun. And nothing's as fun like the 22nd of October 2008. Because I don't have you down as a gamer.
No, I'm not.
No.
Is it an entire Wii or is it a controller?
£207 you've spent on this. October 2008.
Now, I reckon what that is. So my family aren't particularly sort of tech and internet savvy.
Ah.
My mum to this day is not online in any way, shape or form.
Wow.
That would probably have... So I then became the sort of lightning rod for family purchases.
A mule, an Amazon mule.
Yeah, so that would have been an Amazon mule purchase for my sister.
Okay, okay.
And her kids.
Have you never been tempted by computer games? Because I always look at them and think I'd love to lose myself in something like the Wii for hours and hours, but I just don't have the right personality for them. I don't know why.
Twice in my life I've lived in houses with a computer console.
Yeah.
A games console.
Again, that sounds so old. A computer console.
And twice I lost a summer to... Once to Wii Bowling and once to GoldenEye.
Yes.
I mean, literally, this is living with Russell and John. Literally, blinds down, heat wave. They're all going to the park to play football. I'm like, no, I've got to get past this stairwell with my grenades. So I just always knew. And like iPhone games were an absolute nightmare for years. Yeah. I've now managed to get on top of that.
Literally, you just can't even
I can't
begin.
Stop playing.
Really? I just missing gigs, missing stuff.
I did once miss a gig for an online golf game called Shot Online, which was sort of an alternative golf reality where you would all sort of log in with your different characters, meet in the courtyard, and there were lots of different sort of golf courses. Some were sort of fantasy, some were realistic. You know, if you did this, you'd get a new jacket, which would give you +2 accuracy if you bought it. I mean, I spent so much fucking money on that. I spent so much money on it in small increments that Barclays called me to say, we think someone's like skimming your card.
Wow.
Because all these payments of $2.99 were going out at like midnight and it was me buying.
And how was that moment where you had to say to your bank manager, no, that's my choice.
That's just me buying a cap for my online golf avatar.
Is it a real cap? No, it's sort of an NFT, but you won't know about those yet.
Yes, you can have my date of birth, but you will be surprised by how old it makes me. Yeah, that was dark, dark, dark. God, I was just drinking so much rum, playing golf in an online parallel universe.
Did you feel unhappy at the time, though?
Yes.
Oh, did you?
Oh, God, it was awful.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Were you single?
No, I mean, it caused the... It was an element of the breakdown of our relationship. Mm. Christ. Oh, God, you thicko. Anyway, what's next?
I love it when my guests move me on. 5th of March 2008, you have spent £25 on the Victorinox Swiss Army knife. It's a classic Swiss Army knife, this. 33 functions.
Can I see it?
Yeah. Blade, scissors.
Oh, that's the Swiss champ.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's gorgeous.
Why did I buy a Swiss champ? When I was about 8, my dad came to visit and he bought me a Victorinox. It was a Hunter Swiss Army knife, which I still have. And it was the second biggest one. And I said to him, can I have the Swiss champ? And he said something. He gets sort of always had these little sort of metaphors for explaining himself. But he said, it's like buying a pair of shoes. We wouldn't buy you a pair of size 10 shoes when you're a size 6.
Right.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it
yeah.
didn't have the magnifying glass.
But the thing is that feet are guaranteed to grow to that age, so yeah. you will eventually get that size.
Yeah, also, it's not like that. It's like saying, I want to buy you a slightly worse pair of shoes.
Yeah, I want
the one you want. But I
get your sandals.
You know, it's not a bad lesson to learn, and that penknife has stood me in good stead.
Can I say something? I did exactly the same thing. My dad bought me a penknife when I was a kid, and I loved it, and I lost it, and I really, really sad. My dad then died not long after. killed himself with a penknife, no. He subsequently passed away. And I was always very sad that I lost his penknife, and my wife bought me the bigger version of it when I was an adult.
Mm.
And I love it so dearly, and I know exactly which drawer it's in. But crucially, I love it for emotional reasons. It's so useful.
Yes, it is. I was obsessed with knives when I was a kid. I was a collector of everything. So crucially pre-eBay, but I collected knives, I collected farthings, I collected wrestling cards, I collected football stickers, even though I never had the albums. I just liked collecting big piles of stuff.
And would you look at them and pore over them?
Yeah. Coins were my big one.
Really?
Do
you still have the coin collection?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you still collect them or we just...
No, I could do, because like now I've got disposable income, which I didn't have then.
Yes.
So I could go back into it big style, but I don't know, there's something quite nice about collecting when spending the money on something really means something. So lots of comedians do like football stickers every year.
Mm.
And I hate it because they buy like the bulk boxes direct from... Yeah. Online.
Yeah.
So they'll buy like 20 boxes for 50 quid each.
They'll
spend a grand on it. And you're like, well, that's not what collecting is.
No.
It's about opening a packet and it mattering because that's your pocket money.
It's diamonds. It's the same economics as diamonds. There's loads of diamonds, but they restrict access to the diamonds, so they become more precious and more special. Totally the same.
And when you're a kid collecting diamonds... You know that it's your £2.50 pocket money, which is getting you 0.001% of a diamond, and it matters.
It means something.
Yeah.
So you're a collector. I feel like collector introverted, quite sort of shy and sort of with your stuff, or no, have I got that wrong?
Yeah, ish. It's just the constant need for things to make me feel better.
Yeah. Luckily, that's totally gone away. Let's move on now, John, into 2010. You've bought two Queen t-shirts.
Oh, nice.
You've bought the Silver Crest t-shirt, black.
Let me see.
Which one do you want to see first? This is going to sort of recharge your Queen batteries.
Oh, so good, yeah.
Still got it?
That's no, I don't still have that. I would have just worn it out. I had a Queen t-shirt, which I wore at uni, which was black with sort of gold crest, and I wore it until it had huge hole huge holes everywhere, and I still wore it when I was going through my sort of slightly gothy Lou Reed phase with jeans with big tears in,
yes,
studded dog collar,
distressed clothing,
Mohican.
Nice. Did you have a Mohican?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. I was quite cool.
But was Queen cool at that stage? I feel
no,
like
never
it wasn't
never,
was it
no they've never been cool. In fact, do you know what? Now, I think they're probably cooler than they've ever been.
I think so.
So the reverence for sort of Live Aid, for the Wembley years, it is interesting how they have become quite cool.
Like in the 90s when we were sort of growing up and it was all, I was listening to the Smiths, but people were like Manson and, you know, that was the offbeat alternative to things like obviously Oasis and Blur. Queen were not even in the race.
They were not in the game.
No.
No. But I still literally flew the flag. I did have a flag.
You had a Queen flag.
I had a cap, hoodie, flag, badge, enamel badge, fan club badge, fan club membership card.
Wow.
All that stuff.
Yeah, and have you met Brian May? Have you done that?
I've met him. I've interviewed him. Oh. I've shaken hands with him.
Oh.
I've discussed...
Badges.
Badges, depression, and Frank Zappa with him.
Wow.
I am very lucky to have met Brian and chatted to him.
Starstruck? Did you have a starstruck experience with him?
First time I met him, yeah. But then, like, he's just such a... He's very generous with his time and his thoughts. And I think anyone like that, when you're interviewing them... And it was the same, because I interviewed Rami Malek when the film came out and the rest of the cast.
Mm.
If you've done your research and you even ask them one borderline interesting question... That just makes them go, oh, someone's actually read the book. Yeah. Oh, someone's actually cares.
Yeah.
It's like eyes light up.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy, I think, because you're trying to, you know, you're trying to whack out a YouTube video of an interview or like a 5-minute bit on a radio show. It's so easy to like want to get to the next bit and go, so, Brian, God, Bohemian Rhapsody's just been voted the number one song of all time. Would you? Is it amazing that people still like, what's Bohemian Rhapsody about? You know, it's, what was Live Aid like? And it's like, it'll be the 10,000th time he's been asked that question. Mm. So to go, I think the book he was promoting was a 3D Queen book about with stereoscopy.
He invented, didn't he?
Well, he invented these sort of owl glasses for looking at the pictures for people who can't free view. I can free view. Guilty.
Oh,
tie me up. Send me to prison for a billion years. So if you're just asking about the process, the thing he's interested in, which I think is polite.
Yeah.
If someone's coming on to plug their book, you know, they're giving you their time for free. If you then go, oh, we'll talk about the book in a bit. What's it like being in Queen? What's Freddie like? And then at the end go, oh, and Brian's book's a bit. I think that's really impolite. Just on a completely separate topic, you've yet to ask me about my tour.
Yeah. You bought some hemorrhoid cream. We'll get to that. By the way, I've got a good Brian May story.
Have you?
Oh, doing that really annoying thing where I interrupt the podcast to say, if you want to know the Brian May story, well, you have to stick around. We'll play an ad and then we'll be back and you'll hear the story. Honestly, it's very good. Bit of a tease. It involves, as all good Brian May stories must, Anita Dobson. Don't go anywhere. Hello, welcome back to part two of My Mate Bought a Toaster with John Robbins this week. Before we crack on with John Robbins and, of course, the Brian May story, that's what you're all back in town for. I know you lot. We'll do it in a moment. Can I tell you about the wonderful podcast False Economy? It's hosted by Vix Layton, who was on this very show a couple of weeks ago. She's very funny indeed. And Paul Watson and Andrew O'Neill as well. And they have got some fantastic guests. Alison Spittle, who I adore, brilliant Irish comedian. That episode has just dropped. She talks about all sorts of things that she's been buying, including her issues with tights and Beyonce. I don't know if that's the same topic or different topics. Anyway, you can find out. If you head over to your nearest podcast platform and do check out False Economy with Vix Layton. It's a really good podcast. They're friends of the show. When this episode finishes, why not tune in to that? Do you tune into podcasts? Maybe not. Right, shall we crack on? By the way, I've got a good Brian May story.
Have you? Hit me.
So he was going to a stargazing evening at a friend's house. Oh. And my friend Harriet Scott off of Magic Radio and formerly done this podcast was going to this thing as well, and it was supposed to be Brian and Anita Dobson arriving, and when they arrived Anita wasn't there, and Brian walks in with his massive incredible telescope, as you'd imagine, the most beautiful telescope ever. And eventually people said, well, did Anita not make it? And he went, no, there was a bit of an issue, because he had quite a small fancy car, and he insisted that the telescope is so precious and delicate it had to go in the front seat. And Anita Dobson went, well, I'm not going in the back seat, Brian. And he went, well, make your choice.
Oh, wow.
You're either coming in the back seat or you're not coming at all. She stayed at home.
Oh, they're a very sweet couple, I have to say. I think they look very glamorous together.
Yes. Yeah. National treasures, both of them. Brilliant.
Oh,
brilliant.
November tangos.
They are full November tangos. December 2011, you bought Kate Allatt, Running Free, Breaking Out from Locked-In Syndrome.
I did have a brief obsession with people who had been locked in their bodies in locked-in syndrome.
And also locked away, because you also bought at the same time Terry Waite's Taken on Trust and John McCarthy's Some Other Rainbow.
Yeah, so I had a bizarre, unhealthy, slightly concerning fantasy about being trapped in a room.
We can lock the doors.
I had this fantasy until, it was like an obsession with the idea of being shut inside a small space. And I think it was a way of my brain dealing with anxiety was like, okay, well, what if you lived in this room? So it's almost like a form of mental agoraphobia.
Yes.
So I read Terry Waite's fantastic Taken on Trust. I read John McCarthy's Some Other Rainbow, named after a Van Morrison song. I read Brian Keenan's superb An Evil Cradling.
You also have here The Diving Bell and The Butterfly.
Yes, which is about being locked in.
Can I just say the Amazon guy delivering these?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everything okay, mate? Do you wanna...
Yeah, amazing that the door opens.
Leave them on the doorstep.
Just slide them under. Can I use the toilet yet?
How aware were you that this was borderline unhealthy at this point? Or were you just sort of... Also, 18th of December, it's Christmas time. You know, warmth and family and da-da-da, and here you are with these.
Johnny J are not in a good headspace, I don't think. I think there's also a sort of slight, especially with McCarthy, Waite and Keenan, because you know they get out, there is a sort of, there's a genre of literature, sort of sci-fi literature, I really like, called the cozy catastrophe film. Now, or the cozy catastrophe book. That does not apply. I would in no way suggest what happened to them. It was horrible.
Of course.
I mean, Terry Waite was in solitary confinement for 5 years.
Yeah.
Maybe even longer.
Unthinkable. Yeah.
Absolutely unbearable. Mm. And he snapped his tooth on day one. That is my favourite, not favourite, that is the most striking detail of any of those books. First day of Terry Waite's kidnap, they give him a pita bread with salad and hummus in. He bites into it, there's a stone in the olive, and he snaps his tooth in half.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine? So... Day one, I think he was total 6 years.
Jeez. The first thing he says, I'll tell you what, and people think they have to wait a long time for a dentist these days.
Exactly.
But the first thing he must have said when that door opened and he finally got out after 6 years, please.
he did eventually go to get to a dentist, but jeez. I mean, not ideal.
Oh my God.
So the cozy catastrophe would be e.g. Omega Man or I Am Legend is the remake. Mm-hmm. Day of the Triffids.
Yes.
That bit in the road when they find the bunker that's full of the tins of food. So it's enormous threat from the outside, but you've got a little safe place.
Yeah.
Where you've got maybe, you know, a 200-year-old brandy, the Mona Lisa hanging on the wall because you've grabbed it from the museum.
Yeah.
Because there's just zombies everywhere. Yeah. But they only come out at night. So the day you can drive your Jaguar XJ220 down the M4 because you're the only person left. So it was all these weird, slightly unhealthy fantasies. Being the only person left in the world.
Yeah.
So being very safe inside a confined room. Having access to, you know, food. Crucially, alcohol. Mm. It was a very isolating mindset. It was basically... You know, to strip it down to what it basically is I wanted to just drink in my bedroom. That's what all of these things are tying into, is that feeling of like security and I don't need to go outside because in the outside world, things go wrong and it's scary. In here, I've got my internet, I've got my music, I've got my cigarettes and I've got my alcohol.
So it's sort of extreme nesting.
Yeah, extreme nesting is a very nice kind of hygge way of putting it.
Yeah
extreme nesting slash, you know, active addiction sort of mental sort of unrest.
We should say as well that as we carve our way through your shopping history, there's a very happy, not happy necessarily the right word, but there's a good arc towards justice here, right? In terms of what's been going on with you recently.
Mean, I discover golf. I'll discover golf at some point soon.
Yes.
You'll find lots of...
A lot of people will be thinking as if your mental torture wasn't enough. You take on this horrific sport known to man.
Yeah, but I mean, what was that, 2011?
We're still in 11, as I've just renamed it.
I'd say career-wise... We're getting into the real dark years of like going up to Edinburgh every year, nothing going on for me. Mm. Writing good shows, though the show in 2011 wasn't great. Just slogging away, doing the circuit. Little bit of bitterness creeping in, little bit of jealousy.
Yes.
Sort of people from my year group starting to kick on.
Yes.
Feeling very much like I was in Bristol and you know, oh, everyone's in that London and they've all got top agents, that kind of attitude, which is not helpful in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
Last person I ever held responsible for anything was myself.
Yeah.
That kind of vibe.
Yeah.
But we're not there anymore. But it's interesting to go back into that mindset through the medium of my Amazon purchases. It really is.
That's all we're here for. We're mindset tourists.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
D-U-A-L-I-T is Julie Toaster in the house, teaming up with Toaster Bot. Oh my God. D-U-A-L-I-T is Julie Toaster, shout it out. A toasty slice from Tom Price on Toaster Bot.
Look, you have discovered electronic nicotine here.
I was such an early adopter. I can't believe it's on Amazon.
I remember.
Wow.
I remember seeing you at a gig, a Radio Wales thing. I saw you backstage. I didn't know you that well then, really. And you were on this little, look like this, like a sort of plastic pen at the back.
Yeah. I used to get them from Germany and then Amazon started doing them. So I would have started on them in about 2011, yeah.
Yeah, here we are, July 11, and you're vaping. You're an early vapist.
Yes, and if it is bad for you, I will be the first to die.
That's true.
I am the canary down the mine. I mean, it has changed my voice. My voice is a bit more gravelly than it used to be.
Yeah, but not as much as smoking would have. Imagine if you'd smoked an equal amount of cigarettes in that time. Like, your voice would be way different.
That's me vaping on a podcast sound.
Oh, very modern. 14th of July 2011 still, the Skoda Fabia petrol and diesel service and repair manual.
Oh, the Haynes manual.
Oh, Haynes. And Haynes plus Skoda. I mean, how long do we need on this? 15 minutes, 20 minutes?
We never, ever opened that manual. Don't know why I bought it.
Wouldn't need
to. As if I was ever going to change the cam belt myself.
Such a reliable car, surely you don't need to.
It was a very reliable car. I drove it into the ground.
Mm. All those miles. I love that car. Gigging around the country, doing Edinburgh. As you say, interesting, that sort of sense of the bitterness a bit maybe starting to creep in, the competitive edge. But in terms of your Amazon purchase history, you'd never guess that as you buy the Complete Poems of Philip Larkin.
Oh, yeah. Is that the hardback?
It's nice.
Let me see. The purple.
£26.
Yeah, so that's version. That is the actual complete, full-on, you know, annotations, everything. I still always go back to the yellow Faber paperback. I think it's the 1988 Anthony Thwaites, which is, for my money, the definitive selected poems.
Yeah.
Because it is the collected, but when they brought out the new version of that, the green cover, they took out some of the poems.
Okay. Was he dead by this point? When did he die? Like 80s?
88, maybe 87?
I studied him at school and I adored him.
He's superb.
Because it's really basic language, isn't it? That's always the thing. It's very almost conversational.
Yeah.
This stuff. You know, we did T.S. Eliot and Larkin at the same time. And I liked T.S. Eliot, but I felt like there was codes and references that I was too stupid to understand. And whilst there are loads of references in Larkin that I'm too stupid to understand, there is a basic impact of the language that just works.
I don't think it would be that you're too stupid. There's some references that are quite sort of their time.
Mm.
But yeah, he wasn't one for complexity for complexity's sake. And that was, he was very anti-modernist in that respect. Though I think he probably had more of a fondness for it than he made out.
Funny as well. I always think of every single night, it comes into my head if I go for a wee, groping back to bed after a piss. That's just in my brain. That's part of my synaptic route.
Yeah.
There's a bit of Larkin on the way.
But that's that poem, that Sad Steps, isn't it?
Mm.
Is such a great example of his sort of, you know, very prosaic everyday observations. You know, the wardrobe in the moonlight, was it I part thick curtains and am startled by the rapid clouds, the moon's cleanliness, wedge-shadowed gardens lie under a cavernous, a wind-picked sky. There's something laughable about this. The way the clouds blow loosely as cannon smoke. I mean, it's fucking amazing.
Mm.
Captain Beefheart loved that poem. Yeah.
Really?
The moon thins to an air-sharpened blade. Oh, is that Sad Steps? I don't think that's Sad Steps. But there's an interview with Captain Beefheart where he talks about the fact he's reading Philip Larkin.
Huh.
And he goes, the moon thins to an air-sharpened blade. Man. What a line.
That's so good.
So I'm going to have to look up where the line, the moon thing.
Yeah, that's going to annoy you now.
Yeah.
Were you right?
No, it's Vers du Société.
Was that in High Windows?
Yes, my wife and I have asked a crowd of craps round for dinner.
Yes, that's what I mean. It's funny.
Only the young can be alone freely, I think it is. Such a good poem. He is so good. I was reading one of his poems the other day, The Importance of Elsewhere.
Mm.
About how when you're abroad, you can sort of improve yourself because you're defined by your difference. But when you're at home, there's no excuse. just you.
Let's go into 2013 now. Boggle Reinvention in June 2013. Classic game. Bit of Boggle there.
Yeah, I mean, lesson learned. Don't mess with it.
Highly addictive.
If it ain't, well, no, it's Reinvention.
Yeah.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Don't do a director's cut of Boggle.
Don't add a little timer to the thing. It doesn't need to be mechanized. There doesn't need to be an LED light.
Yeah.
Let's just have that classic shake.
Yeah. When you do a Boggle or any kind of board game, because there are various board games throughout here, do you have favorite people to play it with? You know, how often do you actually manage to, in this day and age of the phone, go, right, everyone, put everything away. We're going to play Othello.
Never. No one ever likes to play board games with me, or they start off liking it and then they learn to hate it because I'm so competitive and obsessive.
Yeah.
So me and my friends learn how to play Settlers of Catan, right? And we loved playing it. When I got home from gigs, we'd crack open the Settlers of Catan. We would start with Christaberg's High on Emotion, and then when the first city was laid, we would put on the Miami Vice soundtrack and we'd drink beers. But then, of course, I ruin it because I then start playing it online. I then start practicing against computer. I then start reading books about and forums about best strategy. Mm. I then took part in the UK Settlers of Catan Championship.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, 2 months later, we've got this wonderful thing we do as a house.
Yeah.
Oh, John's ruined it because he wins all the time because he's willing to spend 8 hours a day revising for something that is fun.
So that's competitive, but also that is...
Same happened with Scrabble.
I do this. You find something that makes you happy and I drill it to pieces until it doesn't exist anymore. Yeah,
and no one wants to play with you.
Because you're competitive and then you end up... Do you have arguments?
No, not arguments, because just I would get so good. It was sort of a form of like smugness. Mm. I just knew I was going to win.
Yeah.
Same's happened with Wordle.
Yeah.
I've got a Wordle WhatsApp group. And
you're always the first to crack it.
Yeah, I'll just, it's taken some of the fun out of it because I'll happily sit for an hour in the morning. Mm. I'll wake up at 6, make my cup of tea, happily sit with an hour working out every possible word it can be.
Wow.
And then doing the best sort of elimination for that. And
Do you feel empty inside when you win?
It's such a good question because there's like this immovable force meeting an immovable object of my need to win. The fact I know I'm ruining it for myself and others, and just the need to win always wins.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. So you are a winner. That's the important thing.
Yeah, but it's sort of at what cost? At what cost being right? That's a new mantra I've got. Mm. At what cost being right?
Ah, it's a really good question.
Mm. I think it's a really good question to ask yourself in an argument, on Twitter, in a family situation at work.
Yeah.
What price am I willing to pay for being right?
I think as I die, would I rather go through lots of memories of, you know, happy times with my family, or would I rather just go, I was right?
Yeah.
I think the latter. Yeah. I think the latter, honestly.
Yeah, I was right. People should have listened, but they didn't. Burn the laptop and die.
Since 2003, Juliet has made approximately 1.5 million toasters, and every week at the West Sussex factory, over 2,000 classic toasters shall clean. Now here's a very special competition for you all. Win a classic toaster, sandwich cages, a kettle and some more. A travel month, compostable coffee bags, all guaranteed. Choose the colours you like, subject to availability. Go to juliet.com/toaster.
Let's have a look at 2014 puppy training for kids, December 2014. I'd rather have kid training for puppies, but go on.
As someone with no kids, and an absolute loathing of dogs.
Oh.
It's important to know your enemies.
Use it as evidence. See, they bite each other. They piss everywhere. What is the worst pre-existing condition for a future partner to have? A kid on board or a dog on board?
Oh, dog.
Really?
Oh, I'd be the world's best stepdad. I'd love to enter into the sort of stepdad phase, perhaps at about the age where an awful lot of the key training is done.
Toilet,
nice. Mouth closed when eating.
Mm-hmm.
Bed. And then I can sort of give really good advice, problem solving. Lifts. Do you need to lift a football? Get in the back of the Sportage.
Yes,
I'll take you to the driving range.
Then you can stay and watch, and then you stay and play, and it's incredible.
Yeah. So I would love all that stuff.
All right.
Any divorcees out there?
Tony Blackburn, Poptastic, My Life in Radio.
Oh, well, interesting tale attached to that.
Go on.
So I started reading from Tony Blackburn's Poptastic, My Life in Radio, on our XFM show.
This is you and Ellis?
Yes, because I'd noticed a Twitter account had started screen grabbing passages from it. I say this with so much love and respect and admiration for Tony Blackburn.
Yeah.
It is the funniest book ever written. And I am not joking.
Yeah. It's better than Partridge.
Well, it was a reference point for Partridge. Oh. There are elements of it that are not like lifted wholesale, but have clearly influenced elements of iPartridge and Nomad.
Mm.
Every chapter is an absolute gold mine. It's also quite interesting because it is the story of the birth of basically popular music and radio.
Yeah.
Told through the eyes of someone who got something like 28 million listeners a day.
Oh.
You know,
that's like five live levels of listenership. That's insane.
That is seven times as many people as would be listening to peak five live now.
Mm.
So it's a levels of fame you can't really replicate now. 50% of people were listening to that breakfast show.
Yeah.
So that is interesting. I mean, the way he tells a story about, you know, there's a chapter on his sort of, you know, Alan has my drink and drugs heck. Well, Tony has a chapter on his drug problem, which he sort of talks about spiraling out. And then just this lovely little detail at the end where he says, but I was careful to keep it just to weekends. There's a bit about how he always takes dates to the same Soho restaurant because they do piping hot minestrone soup. And he has to have his soup absolutely piping hot. There's a bit when he gets kidnapped and taken to he gets kidnapped as a prank and taken to a sort of a windsurfing lake near Heathrow. It's a bit where he gets mobbed by people asking for his autograph, but because they've taken all the lids off their pens,
all
he gets
out.
Pen all over his sort of new jacket. There's a bit where he's talking about, oh man, the turn of phrase is exceptional. Yeah. There's a bit where he's talking about these Love and Soul nights he used to put on at a club in London.
Yeah.
And he says something like, I think our Love and Soul nights in Camden did more to bring communities together than anything any politicians have ever done, apart from one night when someone was arrested for murder. And then off the back of that, I wrote Robins Amongst the Pigeons, which is like my Blackburn-esque, Partridge-esque autobiography, which we read out on the show. And off the back of that, Ellis and I did our first ever live gig together.
Okay.
And sort of, that was the first time we realised, oh, wow, we've got people who really love our show. Yes. Because until then, you're sort of listeners, we always got really nice emails, but until you actually see them and feel them and hear them in a room.
Yeah.
It was downstairs at the Phoenix in Oxford Circus, not far from where we are now.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, there's probably only 180 people there, but the noise.
Amazing.
When we came on stage was unreal.
So this is really interesting because we've got to a point here where you know, we've talked about dark times with you and with the comedy and feeling competitive. And then we see this Tony Blackburn book, and that's sort of heralding the beginning of this new bit, right? Which has led to untold success. Like, you've done so much stuff now.
Yeah, and I think it's just really important to keep trying. And if you are constantly looking outwards at what is holding you back being other people, you're looking in the wrong direction. You need to keep looking to yourself to go, okay, well, what am I doing next? What's my next thing? Keep fucking going. And if you're any good, eventually that thing will arrive that's yours. And it doesn't have to be liked by millions of people. It doesn't have to be on telly. It doesn't have to be, nowadays especially, you don't have to have that many people on board to really make, you know, a good living, make a bit of an impact and have a product. Because whether it's, you know, social media or Twitter or podcasting or Patreon or live stuff, you can be creative and cover your rent and your food and put a bit of money aside without that. You don't need 28 million listeners anymore.
Yes.
And that's great. And it's really freeing.
Yes.
But you have
to keep going because the numbers start so slowly, slowly, slowly. And you've just got to keep plowing away. And that's the big message, right? You would send back to yourself in 2011 when you're reading about locked-in syndrome. Is keep going. Keep going. You will break out.
But also start looking at what you can control.
Interesting.
Stop worrying about other people and stop resenting things that are nothing to do with you.
Oh, I'm a resenter.
But the amount of times I've been like...
I feel like you should be my therapist sometimes, John. That's so me. I still do it terribly.
The amount of times I'm like, how is he doing that thing? And my friend will say to you, John, you turn that down.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, yeah. But that sort of mindset is so common amongst comedians.
Yeah.
How did that get commissioned? Well, because someone wrote it.
Yeah.
What have you got?
I didn't write it. I didn't get around to writing my version of that.
Yeah, but mine's in my head. Mm. But someone should have knocked on my door and said, John, we're suspicious there might be something in your head. Here's £1 million. It's just not going to happen. So you've got to keep creating.
It's so weird though, isn't it? That point at which you almost feel entitled to it. You know you're good and you think it's just going to arrive at your doorstep. And it turns out it's not quite as simple.
Oh, it's poor me.
Yeah,
another
it is a
one.
Bit, isn't it?
Yeah. My message to myself would be, let's have a little look in the mirror, mate.
Also buy some Camden Weeknight, 18th of December, 2020. We're in 2020 now, by the way. So look, this is you beginning.
2020?
Yeah, we've skipped on ahead.
Okay, so we're locked down almost.
Well, yeah, 18th of December, 2020 was when we were just about to go into the worst, I think, lockdown in 2021. But Weeknight, obviously, that's your breakfast lager right there. Does that hint... does that hint at edging towards going, yeah, maybe I'm drinking a bit much?
Oh, well, years before that. I mean, 2017, I started... trying to moderate and control my drinking, which I thought had been very, very successful. And only now do I realise slowly, slowly drove me to the, as someone once said, to the gates of insanity or death. I mean, I was losing my mind, but that would have been totally part of that. So Camden Weeknights, 3%.
Yeah.
So in my thinking, you know, I'm trying to have more days off alcohol a week. I'm trying to drink the weakest stuff I can. So I cut out spirits in 2017. They sort of, you know, the odd phasing back in.
Yeah.
But I was, so I would, what would happen is I would get Camden Weeknight when it wasn't available in Tesco because they had one unit a can.
Mm.
So I would have like six of them and I would get a bottle of Riesling because Riesling's like 9%. So Riesling, say, what would that be? Like 8 units.
Mm.
So I've got my 6 units of weak beer, my 8 units of weak wine. So that's that 14 units. And I'd probably have a couple of ciders, but like 4% ciders.
When was it? This is 2020.
Yeah.
Did you knew you had a problem?
No, I thought I had solved my problem by doing stuff like this.
But yeah, mathematically sort of arranging it in front of you, doing admin.
Yeah. So I'd gone from like drinking half a bottle of rum a night and a couple of beers, which sounds, you know, for some reason, half a bottle of rum sounds like you've got a problem.
Mm.
It's exactly the same as drinking 3% lagers and a weak wine.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a couple of ciders for pudding because you can't get to, you need a bit, just, but I was just always drinking to the same place. regardless of what it was.
By yourself?
Yeah. Well, that was lockdown, so it's complicated because I was sort of in between my house, because I live on my own, my then partner's place. And I was sort of, I'm aware now looking back, I wasn't the best company, because part of me was sort of, when can I get to the bit where I can drink freely? Because I always felt around other people, I had to sort of give the impression of drinking normally.
Right.
So I'll have, you know, yeah, I'll have, oh, I might just have a beer before dinner and I'll open a bottle of wine while I'm cooking, which all feels quite normal. But inside I'm sort of, I'm like holding back a bit, and then I'll get back to my house. Yeah. And here we go.
Speed. Properly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, bam, oh bam, man, bam. Gone. Just gone. Where's it go? I mean, oh, fuck me. The amount of times I like say, right, not drinking tonight. You've got early start tomorrow. And as I'm saying that, not only have I poured myself a can of Guinness, it's finished.
Wow.
So I'm like, as I'm finishing the sentence, going, come on, John, you can get through this. It's just, oh, it's gone. Okay, here we go. We're on it. Let's go.
But this is what they say, right? It's like someone else is doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's you inside going, I'm nothing. What? I can't control it.
I'm just a vehicle for like alcohol consumption. It drove me insane over years.
So here you are on a zero unit scenario now. That's it.
Yeah, nothing. Sober as a J.
Every single day. That's the thing, isn't it? Every day you don't drink. That's all you think about is the
yes,
day.
Yes. I was on the way here thinking, Christ, got my tour coming up.
God, Tom Price, I need something strong.
But, you know, thinking like, I've got Edinburgh next week starts. How are you going to get through that? And you just have to go, well, we're not going to get through that today.
No.
Because that's, you can't do anything about that now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like worrying about a round of golf tomorrow. I can't play that round of golf now. So there's no point worrying about it now.
Are we allowed to talk about golf now? It's a sort of analogy with alcohol. I think we can unleash the golfing.
Sure. Has there been any golfing products?
Well, the golfing products have been hanging around. I've skipped over a few, but we're in 2020. I've skipped on ahead. Here we have the Absolute Booties premium bamboo golf tees. I love a bamboo golf tee.
Love a bamboo golf tee.
It really makes up for all the eco crimes that golf performs around the world.
Well, it makes you feel better about chucking things into bushes.
People do.
It's made of bamboo. It's like people say, oh, it's biodegradable, this dog shit bag. So yeah. I'll just chuck it in a hedge. We're still going to be there for 50 years.
So annoying. The bamboo tees, chuck it in, the pandas can have it. Watch all of our episodes on YouTube. At my Maple Toaster, that's the channel you must find. Watch the faces dropping as Tom Bryson specs the shopping. With my Maple Toaster, you know it's one of a kind. So look, let's go into 2021 and let's see what is going on in 2021. Nice. Donut cushion for pressure relief. Orthopedic ring seat for hemorrhoids.
Do you know what? That was bought just because I had such a crappy office chair at home, lockdown. So the hemorrhoid element was not helpful at the time. However, after a lockdown of sitting, did really come into its own.
And is the ring seat cushion good for the ring?
It is, but I've since upgraded to a kneeling chair.
Okay. So the hemorrhoids have brought you to your knees. Oh, you've got a handheld Hoover, the Beldray.
That's crap.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's absolute crap.
You don't want to buy it again? Because I can.
No.
$72.99.
The last thing I want to do is buy that Beldray again. It's rubbish.
Well, can I say one word on behalf of them? I'm not an ambassador of Beldray, but I'm interested if you're watching. Clean your filters.
It's just a load of crap.
Really?
I bought, if we could get up to my, I don't know if you get up to the Shark upright Hoover, is one of the greatest things. Yeah. This says more about my life than the quality of the Shark Hoover. The greatest things in my life. Someone who'd always used one of those kind of really clunky, heavy Hoovers that made a lot of noise, and you would just, you'd be on a flat, like wooden floor, and you would push it over a load of, I don't know, flour that you dropped, and just nothing would happen. I'd lived with that for 10 years to suddenly be in the world.
The acceptance of it as you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually just sort of rolling this in further into the pile.
Flour famously heavy and dense, of course. Why? How would the Hoover be able to suck that
up? The Shark upright Hoover.
Yeah.
It is nimble. It is quiet. It's got a light on the front. It goes down completely flat to get under a table. You just pull off the little attachment and you've got yourself a handheld. The Beldray cowering in the corner.
Wow.
You try that, harder, though. Beldre.
It's not good enough, Beldre. It's not good enough. Well, I hope they're not watching now. Well, maybe they are.
Well, I hope they up their game.
Yeah. Try and compete with the shark, although it's hard. It's
one of my pet hates is cheap stuff that's shit. I would rather, like saying about the printer, I would rather pay 200 quid for something that works than 45 quid for something that breaks immediately and is crap.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think Amazon's quite bad for that, actually.
Yes.
It's gone, take headphones, for example. It's got a hell of a lot of stuff in the 10 to 20 pound bracket.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. And it's almost disposable.
And I don't mean luxury stuff. I don't mean paying for the sake of a brand or to have a certain type of headphone. But I mean, give me something that just works really well.
Look at that. The Shark Upright Vacuum Cleaner. It's the NZ850 UK that you've got.
It's so good.
229.
Yeah. Happy, more than happy with that.
Think how many times you're going to hoover it. How many times are you going to do that? If you pay a pound for every time you do it, you're making money back.
A billion years. Yeah, exactly. I'll have that vacuum for a billion years.
Exactly. So that's how long you're going to live now. You're all super healthy.
That's true. Well,
I hope you like yourself. This is the big point, right? Because you're going to have to spend a lot longer with yourself now.
This is what's going to happen is you do all this kind of work on yourself and then you just get hit by a bus. But just you just make a slightly bigger dent.
If he had so much protein, the muscles did so much damage to the bus.
Yeah.
The last thing you bought, this was delivered on Tuesday, was the Coffee Disc Mesh and Fine, a reusable stainless steel metal filter for use with the AeroPress coffee maker. And it's a happy end. You know, we started this episode... We started this episode with a CD of an interesting musical thing as you began your journey from Bristol into comedy.
Yeah.
Going, you know, struggling with yourself, struggling with comedy. And here we are drinking. What I always try and do, by the way, you may have noticed, I try and take the last item that you bought and turn it into something that reflects on you as a person where you are now.
Well, it's sort of, it's change and more of the same in some senses because I am now into coffee.
Yeah.
I'm a coffee guy.
Great.
That's how I identify.
Lovely. Do you do units? Do you work out how many units of caffeine there are and you have to...
Oh, yeah. We are weighing our dose.
Oh, lovely. I have,
in a sense, become everything I hate because I was...
I think we should leave it there. Thanks for coming on the show.
I was the guy in the pub going, what the fuck are you doing having coffee?
Yeah.
It's Monday night. Mm. It's 6:30 on a Monday.
Yeah.
It's pub time.
Not latte time.
However, now, like all people who eventually stop drinking, I'm now into coffee grinders.
Do you hand grind?
I hand grind.
Because you can really control the...
I've got my espresso grind for my first two cups.
Yeah.
I've got my low caffeine, not decaf.
That's a way to do it, isn't
it? That's a varietal. So it's not. Okay. They don't interfere with the bean. It just happens to have lower caffeine in it.
Mm.
Then I've got decaf for the evening. I've got my AeroPress and I realized that I needed a slightly wider hole in my AeroPress mesh filter because I don't use paper, I use a metal one.
Yeah.
And sure, it gives me a slightly muddier cup, but that's what I like.
A muddy cup of coffee.
I don't like it to be too clean and acidic, actually.
Oh, my God.
I don't like citrus notes.
Oh, no. Well, I see. I hate myself. I love a chocolatey round flavour.
I do. Mm. Give me your chocolates. Give me your caramels. Give me your toffee.
Give me
your biscuit.
Treat me.
Do not give me your lemon.
No.
Blackberry.
It's an aggressive coffee.
Your red currant.
I don't want it. No. Some people say, you know, no one wants to be a glass of water. You are, John Robbins, a muddy cup of coffee.
I like muddy. I like cowboy coffee. I like cupping.
Yeah.
I just like to cup. Oh, God. Oh,
look who
God.
You've become.
I've got to go to Edinburgh. We haven't even talked about my fucking tour yet.
We need to talk about your tour.
Stop listening now.
It's all gone. They've long since gone. It was just you and me on the night bus.
I've been on your YouTube channel. I know the importance of making a good impression here because 23 people have watched Jason Manford talk about why he bought a comb.
You really have been on there.
If just 1% of those people buy a ticket, that's 0.23 tickets.
Oh, God, this is a really important part. So listen, we are at the end of the episode and it's been a hell of a journey and people can continue their journey with you, John. Your new tour, Howl, your new show, is that going to Edinburgh then in August?
Yes.
Are you doing the whole month?
Yes, two shows.
Jesus. A day?
Yes.
Two different shows a day?
Yes.
With no alcohol?
Yes.
Okay, and no golf? You've got to take your golf clubs?
Take my golf clubs, playing Muirfield.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a genuine look of anger there.
Just really furious.
Yeah, so I'm doing Howl at 8.50. I'm doing a work in progress at 3.10. Whack those together. Bish, bash, bosh. You've got yourself a tour show starting on the 14th of September, running till the 15th of December.
Yeah.
Do check johnrobbins.com for details. If you want to hear the story behind the story behind the Amazon purchases.
Good. Really nice.
Thanks,
so, man. In many ways, your tour is a spin-off to this interview.
That's, do you know what? In many ways, it is, actually. It is the story of what we've been discussing here.
It's an interesting story. It's an honest story. And it's a funny story. That was so great. Thank you, John.
No, thank you.
That was really funny. Thank you, John Robbins, for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster. What a hero. And the lols don't have to stop there. You can head to patreon.com/toasterpod and hear the other bits, which we had to cut out. Otherwise, it would have been like an hour and 40 minutes long. There's moments like this. This is one of the biggest books of 2009. I'm not surprised you bought it. Jaguar, the Complete Story. If you want to know the story as to why he bought Jaguar the Complete Story, go to patreon.com/toasterpod. For as little as £3 a month, you can support our little tiny show. Next week on My Mate Bought a Toaster, the final episode of this series, we find out what makes Alex Brooker tick.
So I love Christmas. I love boy bands. I love the OC. I love Dawson's Creek. I love The Bodyguard, a love all stuff like that. So I'm unashamed about it.
And now after interviewing him, I love him too. We found out all sorts of stuff. Quite weird facts like this.
Rifle shooting is the most naturally good I've ever been at anything.
There you go. There's your Alex Brooker trivia. He is fantastic. Really, really funny, funny guy. I mean, my favourite moment. Listen, you've made it this far into this podcast. I'm going to reward you. Here's a clip of my favourite bit from next week's episode.
You don't know true fear until you can't find your leg after a one-night stand.
Sorry, that is too funny to only play once. I'm going to play it again.
You don't know true fear until you can't find your leg after a one-night stand.
All that and more on next week's last episode of this series of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Thank you so much for listening. If you get a moment to give us a nice review, that would really, really help. Ha, we're done. See you next week.
It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, it's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Yeah, yeah, it's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Toaster for my love.
What's a sandwich cage?